Reignite on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now to our first guest. Brad Meltzer is an Emmy-nominated and New York Times best-selling author. He has written superhero comics for DC Comics, including Superman, and recently went viral after a commencement speech in the United States. So viral that he turned it into a book called Make Magic, the book of inspiration you didn't know you needed. We caught up earlier and I began by asking Brad to take us back to his recent University of Michigan speech in front of 70,000 people and why he was chosen to speak to graduates.
Yeah, so as you said, it's 70,000 people in a stadium, but I'm focused on one because my son was graduating that day and he's there in the 14th row. I can see him. And I will tell you that when they announced that I was going to be the graduation speaker, my son, Jonas, had the same reaction as I think many people in the stands have, which he said, "You? Not Tom Brady?" And he said, "There's so many people they can pick." And then I'll never forget, he said these words to me. He said, "It's like a 13th seed winning March Madness," like as if, you know, the lottery ticket. And obviously, I asked myself that same question. Why did they pick me? And I was just happy to have this moment to not just the fact that I went to the University of Michigan, so I was a graduate, but my son was now graduating my university. And it let me just bring this old past version of me into the present in a way I could have never anticipated.
Because you were reflecting back on, I think, what would have been your 24-year-old self that would have graduated now, standing there as a, I think, maybe 54-year-old gentleman, not to be giving ages away, but you were able to bring wisdom, a life well lived, and you had this maybe, 19, 20 minutes to try and share some wisdom of a life lived, and you started to talk about magic.
And that's the thing, right? We all know that magic doesn't exist, but there are things in this world that can't be explained. And as a writer, that's my job, making things appear out of thin air. So I went and talked to magicians, and I said, that's what I want to talk about, making how you actually make magic. And when you talk to magicians, they'll tell you there are only four types of magic trick. That's it. Put aside illusions and escapes. There's just four types of tricks. One, you make something appear. Two, you make something disappear. Three, you make two things switch places. And finally, number four, you change one thing into something else. The hardest trick of all, transformation. And that's what I talked about, you know, how to make something appear, how to make something disappear. And I will tell you, there was a moment where I got to the third magic trick. How do you make two things switch places? And I said, here, let's talk about empathy. Because that's what empathy is, right? It's switching places with someone else and putting yourself in their shoes. And I said that, you know, today, cruelty and venom and harshly judging those we disagree with, it's become sport in our culture. But cruelty and venom aren't signs of strength. They're signs of weakness and petty insecurity. What takes strength is showing kindness to someone and showing empathy to someone. And as I said those words, I felt the entire crowd react. And when you do a speech like this, you know, you practice it with your friends and your family, and you can hopefully tell where someone's going to laugh, where someone's going to cry, where someone's going to hopefully applaud, but you don't really know. And then you do it in front of 70,000 people. And I felt they erupted in applause. They interrupted me. If you watch the video, you can see I have to start again when I say those words. And I said to myself, what just happened here? And it wasn't until it was over that my wife said to me, you tapped a vein you didn't know was there. And I think as a culture right now, where you are, even where I am in the United States, we are starving for kindness, starving for empathy. And I saw it happen in real time. And when the speech was over, all these people were asking me for the content of the speech, except saying, I want the text of that speech, send it to me. People tracked down my sister's unlisted number. They said, I saw your brother in the stadium. I want the text of that speech. I've been doing this for 25 years. No one's ever asked for the text of anything I said, but they wanted the text of the speech. And suddenly right there, Make Magic not only became a speech, but we decided to turn it into a book to give people inspiration they could use every single day.
And when you talked about that number three, switching, swapping places, empathy, you talked about your grandparents and you went back to this moment of you moving from Brooklyn to Miami. Talk to us about that moment of kindness, of empathy.
Yeah, this was, I was just 13 years old and my dad lost his job and we had to move from New York to Florida and my grandmother lived there. And we had no savings And for months, six of us, my mom, my dad, my sister, myself, plus my two grandparents, had to live in a tiny one-bedroom apartment. And since it was Florida, it was such a small space that everyone in the building started complaining and saying that, you know, you can't have six people in a one-bedroom apartment. You got to evict these people. You got to kick them out. You got to evict them. And everyone was trying to get us kicked out. And one day, the neighbor across the hall told my grandmother that she'd leave her own apartment and give it to my grandparents so that we could use it, so my family could have some space and comfort and not have to worry about everyone who wanted to evict us. It was the nicest thing to this day that anyone's ever done for me or my family. I remember this woman's name, the neighbor. Her name was Mercy, which as a kid, I always heard as Mercy. And make no mistake, mercy and empathy is what she showed us. And I'll never forget that.
There's a quote that says, "One day someone's going to hug you so tight that all your broken pieces will fit back together." And right now, the world needs more empathy. It needs more kindness. It needs more decency. If you really want to shock the world, unleash your kindness. That's a completely naive idea, but it's an idea worth fighting for.
And that is the line from this incredible speech that has resonated time and time again. If you really want to shock the world, unleash your kindness. Get back to simplicity. Get back to good values. Get back to having each other's backs as fellow citizens.
Yeah, it really did catch me off guard, because you write these lines and you don't know what's really going to work. And there was something about that line that touched people in a way that I was really unprepared for. And I don't look at it as like, oh, I did something great. It's actually sad to me in a way, because we're starving for kindness right now. We're starving for empathy. I had all these people who suddenly started going on my Instagram and going on, you know, my Facebook and you know, TikTok and everywhere else, and just telling me their story of the mercy in their life that someone showed them. And, you know, there's a line in the speech that says, and I believe it to my core, it says, every person you meet is fighting and dealing with something you can't see. The only way to deal with anyone is to find some kindness, find some empathy with them. And the thing is right now we're in a state where the news is just overwhelming. We shut down, right? We see too much bad news and we shut our feeds and we shut our TVs and we shut down. But you can't shut down. We need you right now. And the one thing that's really amazing about empathy is, if you want to have more empathy, all you have to do is want to have more empathy. Social scientists have pointed out that empathy is malleable. And what's amazing, it's, think back to your first years in university. You make the most friends in those first years. And why? Because you're open to meeting and making more friends. So again, don't shut down. Have more empathy by wanting to have more empathy. It is the only way I can really understand that we can really change the world.
And it does require, though, what you called magic trick number one, make the best version of you appear, that there is an inner us and our inner monologues, but we have to try and kind of find the outer us, you know, and give expression and verbalize those outer selves, our best selves. And you on that day in that speech in this book talk about your own perseverance, even becoming a novelist and a writer and having to deal with rejection, but finding the unconditional love and support of family and friends around you.
Yeah, my very first book I ever wrote, it got 24 rejection letters. There were only 20 publishers at the time, and I got 24 rejection letters, which meant some people were writing me twice to make sure I got the point. And when I told my then girlfriend that I wanted to be a writer, she had the best reaction of all. She didn't laugh. She said, "Then go be the writer. Go write that book." She stuck with me. She believed in that best version of me. And again, social scientists will point out, it's called a reflective best self portrait. When someone tells you that they see that best version of you, you start believing in that best version of yourself. And that's what you need to make appear. That's the first magic trick. What you have to make appear is that best version of you. Because we're all chameleons. We act one way with our friends and another way with our parents. But there's those few people that know you so beautifully, so deeply, that you actually are your true best self. Where you just don't judge what you're going to say. You just let it all hang out. And that's who you need to surround yourself with. That's how you become that best version of you. That's how you make the best version of you appear. And that's what that girlfriend did to me. Why do you think I married her? She's my wife and the mother of our three children. And she changed my life by believing in that best version of me. She made that best version appear.
And then trick four, the transformation magic trick, is to believe that we're never done evolving. We got to keep on changing and learning and write, I think, as you said that day, write your lives in pencil, not in permanent marker, and leave, I suppose, enough room to change and evolve.
Yeah, because what we do today is we all think, you know, so many of us think we know it all, right? We go on our social media feeds and we say, oh, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. I know the right answer. And as you get older, it only gets worse, right? But to me, the smartest person in the room is not the person who says they're the smartest person in the room. The person who says they're the smartest person in the room is absolutely not the smartest person in the room. The most intelligent and sophisticated people I know are the ones who know there's always more to learn. So to me, if you start thinking you know it all, then life becomes hard and brittle, it stagnates, and you're never going to learn anything new. What you have to do, as you said, is write in pencil and be unafraid to use the eraser. That's the secret. The key secret is to never stop evolving. The only way to move forward is to always keep changing. And that's how you transform. And that is the hardest magic trick of all, is to transform. But it's the only way, in my mind, to move forward. I think as long as you do that, you can always make a new magic trick.
And is the challenge, like that speech, the book is about the four types of magic tricks. You had this TED talk that was about the four types of legacy and you're challenging yourself to even think about your own obituary. Is that something we should all think about in the here and the now, is the impact we're going to have on our beloved family and friends, on ourselves, our communities, even on strangers? And we may never know the impact we have, but that is our challenge, is to think about our deeds and actions as if we're writing our own obituary and thinking about our own long-term legacy.
And that's what it is. It's not that you have to think about writing your obituary, because that's just a depressing idea. It happened for me years ago because I got to read my own obituary. A reporter wrote it for me. But what it did get me thinking is we every day are writing our legacy. Every day. And we all know that, you know, there's four types of legacies. We all know the first. It's our family, right? The family you surround yourself with and your friends. And then there's a second type of legacy you don't realize. And it's those people who take a chance on you. It's people you work with. It's a mentor who tells you you're good at something for the first time. And again, most people can figure that out. But the hard ones are number three and four. The third one is the impact you have on your community. And the fourth is the impact you have on complete and utter strangers. And it happens all the time, right? Someone sends you an email that says, hey, I'm doing a walk for breast cancer. Can you donate some money? And you don't want to donate because you don't need it. You need another email like that, like you need a hole in the head. But you give your money, or you go to your church, your synagogue, and they're having a canned food drive and you bring that food. There are all these people that are going to the recipients of that donation you make or those canned goods you bring in. You're never going to know their name. They're never going to know your name. But you better believe you're part of each other's legacy. And I think sometimes we have to realize that, you know, what you have to do is you don't get to write your own obituary. What you get to do is you live your life. But to me, the secret of really writing your legacy is you got to go say thank you. Thank that teacher that took a chance on you. Thank that neighbor who gave you their apartment. Thank that person who on your first real job told you you were good at something. Anyone listening right now, when this interview is over, Google that person who changed your life. Find them on Facebook and say thank you. If they've passed away, thank their child. I get letters all the time from people who tell me what my parents did for them when they were baseball coaches or something else. And when you do that, that's how you build the ultimate legacy. And that, to me, is you don't just live a better life. You get to live forever.
You've also been a writer for DC Comics on titles such as Superman, Batman. You've worked on Justice League of America. You've worked on Buffy the Vampire Slayer comic. And Superman is back in our headlines and our news and in our cinemas. And you've talked in the past about the key ingredient is not necessarily the superhero part, but the Clark Kent part. Why is that? What is the thing about Clark Kent that you believe resonates with audiences who come back time and time again to Superman movies, to Superman comics?
Let me tell you my core belief. This is what I believe. I believe ordinary people change the world. I don't care where you went to school. I don't care how much money you make. That's nonsense to me. I believe in regular people and their ability to affect change in this world. And it's why my favorite hero is Superman. To me, the most important part, as you said, is not Superman. The most important part is Clark Kent. And why? Because we're all Clark Kent. We all know what it's like to be boring and ordinary and wish we could do something incredibly beyond ourselves. But here's the news. We all can do something incredibly beyond ourselves. In fact, all you got to do is go say thank you. Say thank you to that mentor, and you'll do something truly amazing. And that's why, you know, when Superman was first invented, right before World War II, after the success, it sold 1 million copies, and all these comic book companies started ripping off Superman, making new heroes with capes, and they could fly, and they could throw people around with super strength. But none of them reached the popularity of Superman. Why? Because they were copying the Superman part. What they weren't copying was the Clark Kent part. The reason he's Superman is because his family teaches him how to be a good person. It's not the super strength. It's not the heat vision. It's that he knows how to always do the right thing, even when it's hard to. And sometimes it's really hard to do the right thing, but someone has to. And that Clark Kent side, what Mom and Pa teach him, that's his ultimate superpower, just being a good person.
Finally, Brad Meltzer, I want to ask you about another book you had out earlier this year, The JFK Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill Kennedy and Why It Failed. Here in Ireland, we have an absolute huge fascination with JFK going back to the 1963 visit, which happened 5 months before his assassination. Just give us the key learning out of that book and the research and publishing it about yet another legacy figure in US politics, and what we can look forward to for those listeners who want to pick up a different book of a different nature listening to this conversation today.
Well, I love the fact that you're going from kindness to murder. That's a wonderful segue.
Hard segue.
I'll tell you this. As you can tell, I have a love of history. Sometimes it's my personal history. Sometimes it's world history. But it always is around history. And I found this story about JFK that no one knows. And this is all true. This is 3 years before Lee Harvey Oswald in 1960. In Palm Beach, Florida, JFK is going to church. It's a beautiful Sunday morning. And he steps outside, and he has no idea that across the street, there is a disgruntled postal worker named Richard Pavlik, who's filled his car with 7 sticks of dynamite. And he's there to kill JFK. JFK, he has no idea about it. In fact, Pavlik's followed him to Florida because he thinks that JFK's security is weakest there, which is true. And as JFK steps outside, all this assassin has to do is hit the little trigger device that's hidden in his car, and boom, truly will go the dynamite. And I won't ruin what happens and, you know, what actually saves JFK's life that day. I think I just ruined chapter one of the book for you, but I won't ruin the rest. But it has to do with Jackie. And Jackie's the real star of this book. And you see what this marriage, this beautiful marriage, selling Camelot to all of us. But in reality, Camelot never exists. And what I learned, you know, especially, you know, for the Irish community is, you know, the reason why this guy Pavlik wanted to kill him, one of the reasons was because he was an Irish Catholic immigrant. There was so much hatred toward, you know, the KKK used to just hate Black people during the Civil War here. But back during the 20s, there was a resurgence in the KKK, and they started realizing they can sell more memberships if they started actually expanding that circle of hate. So they started targeting Jews, they started targeting immigrants, and the KKK saw JFK as an Irish Catholic immigrant. And there's no way they could let him reach the White House. And there were big religious leaders that were like, we can't have an Irish Catholic reach the White House. It sounds silly now, but back then there was so much hatred unleashed. And when you unleash that much hatred and drum up that much anger toward immigrants and toward Irish Catholics, you better believe someone gets activated. And Richard Pavlik was activated and was determined to kill JFK. And you're probably asking yourself, why don't I know this story? And here's why. It was a huge story on the front page of the Florida newspapers. It was about to go nationwide and worldwide. But on that day that it was going worldwide, 2 planes collided over New York City. And everyone on board died except for one young boy who was the sole survivor. And the world became obsessed with this one survivor. Will he live? Will he die? Tell us what's going to happen to him. And in that moment, that took over all the newspapers around the world. And instead, the story became about this young survivor who later died. And the story of JFK and his assassin wound up getting buried into the footnotes of history until myself and my friend Josh Mensch found it and said, we should do a book on this. And that's where the JFK Conspiracy as a book was born.
It's incredible. And it's an extraordinary legacy that you leave, Brad Meltzer. And congratulations on the publication of JFK Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill Kennedy and Why It Failed. And the earlier book that we discussed, Mate Magic, the book of inspiration you didn't know you needed. Thank you so much for joining us on Reignite today.
Thank you so much.
You can WhatsApp the show on 0870 32 32 32 or email us on reignite@rte.ie.